everybody. Welcome to Tio's Roadhouse. Glad to have you all on board. Another episode out in the man cave out here at the house. So the buses are out on the road running all over the country, and we've been flying in and out and catching those guys this summer. Special guest in the house, Cameron Marlowe.
What's up, man?
How are you, brother?
I'm doing
well. Pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well, man.
Thank you for being here with me today.
Oh, thank you.
So my goal is to get to know you today.
All right.
So where are you from?
I'm from Kannapolis, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
We ain't got nothing going on except for Dale Earnhardt and racing. I
said, you don't consider the Panthers anything going on?
Oh no, I'm a Chiefs fan, man.
I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Not a Cam Newton guy.
No,
he's not even there anymore.
No, yeah. I don't even know who's quarterback now.
Yeah, you don't care.
No, I don't.
Okay, that's all good. So the Kansas City Chiefs won last year, which is a good thing for you, I guess, man. They've been dominating every year.
They like to scare me. They like to wait to the last minute to win a game. They put on a hell of a show, but it is just a brutal game to watch as a fan. And then they usually squeak it out somehow, but
yeah, catchy. But they have so much talent on that roster. It's absolutely amazing.
They definitely do.
So tell me about your musical background. Let's kind of get into music and kind of figure out what your influences and things are.
So I guess I started out loving country music with my grandpa. We'd go fishing and stuff like that, and man, every time we'd go, it was a Brooks and Dunn CD. That was the only CD I think he had that he just ran over and over again. And finally, he upped his repertoire and got a bunch of different CDs and stuff like that, a lot of older stuff that he'd listen to. So I listened to a lot of Waylon Jennings growing up, a lot of
George Jones. You sound like you got a little Travis Tritt in there, too.
Just
a skosh.
Definitely listened to a lot of Travis Tritt. Yeah. And, man, it just kind of – I guess after that, like, my dad listened to a lot of rock, so I listened to a lot of rock, and then I listened to, on my own, a lot of blues music. For some reason, I just loved the way that you could feel the vocals, and I thought that was something super special, that you could really just feel what they were singing about. And I guess that's kind of all over the – I'm all over the place, but those are some of mine.
So have you discovered Marcus King yet?
Oh,
Marcus, man, is the beast, is he not?
Oh, dude.
I haven't had a chance to meet that guy yet, but, man, I discovered him probably about 4 years ago. He's got a song called Carolina that was one of his early records, I guess, before he even got a record deal, and he was just kind of scratching around, man. I've been blown away by that guy.
Dude, that is a
Have you had a chance to meet him yet?
I hadn't met him.
I hadn't either.
No, I'd love to meet him, though. Yeah. I'd love to pick his brain. That is a guitar-playing fool, too.
He really is, and I was watching a piece on him. He was talking about how insecure he was because he didn't have good control of his pinky finger, so he just slides up and does things, but he navigates around it pretty dang well.
He's doing a lot better than me with all my fingers.
Yeah. Yeah, so you liked a lot of the outlaw country stuff too. It seems like that was a big influence.
I did, man. In a lot of '90s, you were an influence. So it's really cool to meet you. I ain't gonna lie, but man, I listened to just about anything. I never let music hold me back. Music was always just kind of a release for me. So like anytime I could listen to something different, it's just kind of what I did. This fly is tearing me up.
This fly has been wearing us out all day. I'm going to have to kill it.
But, yeah, so I listen to a bunch of stuff, and I think it kind of translates into the music I make because I get bored. Like, I'll put out, like, my last song sounds really old school, like a Waylon Jennings kind of deal there, and then I've got other songs that are straight down 80s rock that I'm going to be putting out next year. So it's a difference. Yeah, I don't know.
So how are they really marketing you? I mean, from what I understand, you're getting ready to go out on a headline tour coming up very soon. You got a lot of dates that are already sold out, man. You're killing it out there.
Appreciate that. I'm trying my best.
But it's really different these days you used to have have a radio to kind of reach those plateaus before, and I think you can reach them in a lot of different ways now.
Man, I would love to be on the radio, though, I have to say.
Oh, absolutely. I think you'll get there.
Yeah, I'm trying my best. So it's been a time.
Would you rather hear yourself on the radio and not sell any tickets, or sell out arenas and not hear yourself on the radio?
Oh yeah, sell out arenas.
Absolutely,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so. I think it's pretty amazing. So what's kind of the marketing strategy that y'all been going through?
A lot of it now is I feel like everything is just derived on social media. So that is, I guess, a driving factor. But a lot of what we do, man, me and my manager, we really like grassroots marketing.
Yeah.
I feel like in your face, you see it everywhere you go. I think she knows the statistic better than I do, but like what they see it 7 times, and then that 8th time they'll usually go and look at it, and it's like a apparently a statistic or something like that. So I'm a big grassroots old school marketing kind of person, billboards and things like that.
How many cities are you planning on hitting when you go out and headline?
This fall tour will be, it's a little small. I don't know how many cities this one is. Spring tour when we launch.
When y'all
that.
Really start rocking out. Yeah. And you're out, I forget who you're out with right now.
Right now we're with Dirks.
Yeah. I love Dirks, man. He's such a cool cat.
Dude, I haven't met him yet, but I will say, I have not seen a concert, and I hope this isn't a spoiler to anybody who hasn't seen a show yet, but he has a 3D video wall.
Yep.
Have you seen that? Mm-hmm. That is the wildest thing. That blew me away.
Where the speaker stack will actually lean forward.
That is crazy.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that. That's beyond my pay grade.
Oh, yeah, he's spending some money out there. But Dirk's such a cool guy, and I had a chance to do a few shows with him, man. He's just the Hot Country Nights are so much fun. They just kind of do their thing.
Man, I haven't seen that yet.
I like the fact that he just takes it not so seriously and just has a good time and enjoys it. It means a lot.
You can tell on stage, by the way, that he's just rocking around, laughing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
He's just picking on his band the whole time he's playing, and it's awesome. Man.
And I think a lot of those guys have been with him a long time, too. There's just great synergy out there.
Definitely.
So tell me about your band. What instrumentation are you carrying?
So right now... we're missing a couple members. We lost a couple members to some other artists. So right now, all the guys are from Carolina. They've been with me forever. So we're running two guitars, three counting me, and a drummer, and then basses in the tracks.
So no steel, no fiddle?
We lost them, man. We're trying our best to find some right now.
Those are really difficult things to find.
Absolutely. In my music, I have a ton of fiddle, and I have a ton of steel in it. Yeah. So it's hard to... not have a live player. You can get by, but it's a tough thing to not have one live right now.
It really is, and everybody that I know in those slots is working. I mean, everybody.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They're so sparse and so like far in between to find somebody that really locks it in and really knows what they're doing. Like you have a lot of young guys, and we have a lot of young guys in our bands, but like to find like one of those good ones, you got to find somebody that's
they're
60s, 70s that just are locked the heck in.
And when you're a young guy out there being wild and free, it's a 60-year-old guy's probably not so conducive for that environment. I remember being young.
Oh, man.
We've done
some dumb stuff, man.
Tell me the funnest thing that y'all have done on the road.
We like to gamble. We like to go to casinos. Uh-huh. About 2 months ago, we had a casino. We don't usually play casinos often. Just I think it's out of management and my booking agency knows. But I ended up hitting for like $4,000 on a slot machine. And I never play slots. I'm a big blackjack player, so I love to do that. But yeah, I was like, it was
that's a
good winning
leg, man. Absolutely. Yeah, I love. I don't go in and gamble as much as I used to, but God, we're on so many of them out there, man. There's casinos all over the country now. It's not just like it's just Vegas. You know, back in the day when I remember sitting up with Troy Gentry and watching the sun come up more than once playing blackjack years ago, man. We had some good nights out there. It's just I don't do it as much anymore.
I've learned my limit.
Yeah,
I'll take like $100-$200 and that's all I'll spend.
Rather go get in the lazy river and drink and eat jello shots and drink cold beer all day. That sounds much more conducive to my attitude than losing a bunch of money on a blackjack table, because you do lose more than you win.
Oh, without a doubt. Oh, yeah. I've come up even, and if I'm even, I'm good, but if I lose, I'm out. I won't spend any more. I'll give myself the $100-$200 and that's it.
What's the craziest thing a fan has asked you to do?
Signed a lot of boobs, but I feel like that's a pretty tame one compared to other things.
Boobs. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, boobs.
Come on, Scott, pay attention.
craziest thing, I don't know off the top of my head. If you wouldn't have asked me, I probably could have told you.
Yeah, it all does kind of run together. I know it does. Fans can be pretty interesting. You got any stalkers or anything yet?
So I have fake people that make profiles of me.
Oh yeah.
And they will, and they'll reach out. I have inbox messages for days of people just being like, "Hey, did you reach out to me?" I'm like, "No, that wasn't me." So I guess you can call them stalkers, but no, nobody's followed me around yet.
Nobody's like broke into your house or anything yet.
No, somebody broke into your house? Is that something I need to be worried about?
There's crazy people out there, man. There's crazy people out there.
True that.
So tell me about your childhood when you're growing up, brothers and sisters.
I have one little brother.
Big musical family.
No, man. Grew up singing in the church. Me and my mom and dad, like we all sang. They were in the choir, and then I tried to lead. And then I actually, we changed churches and went to another church. I became a worship leader out there for a little while. And that taught me so much about how to put a band together. And honestly, man, those are some of the best times and some of the most learning that I've got for the job that I do now. Yeah. So I'm so thankful that I had that time.
That's a great foundation. I had a lot of that stuff too when I was coming up. Church camp was a great time. I spent a lot of time at church camp in the summers, and just the whole worship leadership thing was an awesome thing to be a part of.
Absolutely.
A lot of, I had a 12 string guitar. Yeah, I had the 12 string.
I got one too, man. I'll break it out every once in a while.
it's kind of a relic from the past. Well, you really don't use it that much in country music, but it was great at church camp.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, all 12 strings. Yeah.
I sing for days, man.
Oh, man, it was awesome. So did you, what was your denomination?
I was a Southern Baptist.
Southern Baptist. Yeah. I grew up Methodist, man.
I hear you.
Yep. You ever experienced any United Methodist Youth, UMY? That was what we called the youth group in the Methodist Church when I was growing up, UMY. And so we had local chapters, sub-district, district, and then the conference council, which was the church camp. And I was like involved in all that stuff growing up.
Oh,
I actually had a scholarship to go to ministry college, and country music kind of stole me away.
I hear you.
Yeah, it's that evil country music got me.
It'll do it, man. Do you remember Vacation Bible School? Did you do those?
Oh, did
all. Oh, shoot.
Yeah, I love Vacation Bible. We had turtle races. I mean, we'd all have to go find a little turtle, you know, when turtles in the country when you grew up like we do. There's turtles everywhere.
Absolutely.
And you'd paint your number on the back of the turtle, and then we'd do turtle races at Vacation Bible School. I remember all that stuff. It was awesome.
That's awesome, man. We never had turtle races. I'm actually jealous of that.
Shoot, man. You learn to make your own fun when you grow up in the country. And I grew up in a town of about 1,100 people.
Oh, wow.
And I spent a lot of time alone, blowing up my little green army men in the parking lot of the driveway and stuff, you know, so all those kind of things.
Absolutely, man. That's awesome.
What was your favorite toy when you were a kid?
Oh, favorite toy when I was a kid? Shoot, man. I didn't really have a lot of toys. I would say my baseball glove.
Yeah.
My parents, one year, and I was probably 8 or 9 years old, they got this, like, so my dad works a lot, or used to work a lot, and he wasn't always around to throw a ball with me. I mean, we played a lot of catch. I don't want to paint him in a bad light or anything, but they got me this, like, you could toss it into the net, and it would pitch it right back to you.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
So, yeah, so I had that, man, and I would sit out there for hours, and that was my favorite thing. I guess that's not really a toy. It was more of a training
play
thing.
Ball?
Yeah.
What was your position?
I was a first baseman and center fielder. I learned by high school I was too short to be a first baseman anymore.
So you're left-handed?
Yep.
Yep, cool. Bad right-handed? You switch hitter?
No. I do.
Play guitar right-handed?
Play guitar right-handed for some reason.
Why is that?
I don't know. I really don't. I think there wasn't any left-handed guitars when I was trying to – I mean, there was, but we were too broke to find a left-handed guitar.
Hendrix just turned it upside down and strung it the other way.
Exactly. See, he was smarter than me. I just was like, I guess I'm going to learn it this way. So now I can't flip it around if I tried. It don't even make sense to try and hold chords with my right hand.
Swing a golf club?
Left-handed.
Yeah. Everything else the other way.
I kick right-footed.
Really?
Yeah, which is strange. I don't know. That's the only other thing.
Is your mom left-handed?
Nobody in my family's left-handed. I'm the only one. Yeah.
Have you done a DNA profile?
What do you say?
Have you done a DNA profile? So just to introduce you, Scott plays piano in the band over there. He's in charge of the video and everything. And that's Derek. We call him Junior. Junior plays guitar in the band. He's not lead guitar. He's second guitar.
Don't want to be lead.
Yeah, because Travis is bad to the bone. Yes, he is. So Junior takes care of all the audio, and I actually stole him from a studio. He was a sound engineer when I was working on a record several years ago, and we stoked him away.
Stoked me.
Was that you playing that opening intro? Liquor?
No, that was actually Travis.
Oh, shoot, that thing was fire. Yeah. It was going off.
It's a beast. I just home and strum and smile pretty.
Me too, man.
Polishes his boots before he walks on stage. Shows out a little bit every now and then. So what's your stage show like?
We're pretty rocking.
Yeah.
We have a lot of fun, man.
Brantley Gilbert kind of rocking.
Well, semi. I'm a little more tame than Brantley, but we like to rock. We like to have a lot of fun, man. We try and work the crowd. We have a good time.
We have
one guitar player, man, and he thinks he's a lead guitar player. He's not. I mean, we love him to death. He's a great guitar player, but we have another. We have him, and then we have another guy that is just,
that is a really good
that is just insane. I mean, he's incredible. But this guy, the one I was talking about, the media not mediocre, but above amateur.
He's gonna hear this, you know.
Oh, I know.
Y'all
I know.
Give him shit all the time.
All the time, man. No, it's just
so this is not anything new.
No, he knows it, man.
I'm just now realizing this is how Tracy talks about me when I'm not around.
No, this is how Joe talks about you. This is not how I talk about you.
But man, his party trick is shotgunning beers, and he is the fastest shotgunning person I've ever seen in my life.
Has he shotgunned a beer with Priscilla Block yet?
No.
She was slam one down, son.
Really?
Oh.
That fast?
Oh, she's good. She didn't beat us, though, did she?
Fast. She didn't beat me.
She beat me.
She beat Scott, but she Scott. Beat me. Yeah.
That was my first one, though. I didn't know how to do it.
That first one always burns, man. That one hurts.
You got to hold it under your arm and warm it up a little bit first.
That's pro moves there.
That's right. Keep a golf tee in your pocket. Golf tees are great for poking them holes in them cans.
Shoot.
Shoot, yeah, son. Okay. I'm telling you all about it. I'll teach you a lot if you just stay around long enough.
I'll be here.
It's been are you enjoying life on the road?
Man, I've had more fun in this. Like, I feel like life before this was a fever dream almost. Like, I used to work for General Motors and sold car parts for a living, and then now I'm out here playing shows and talking to different people every day. Man, I'm having a ball.
Did
I
you
trade this for nothing.
When did you start dreaming about doing this for a living?
I never thought it was possible. I went and did the voice thing when I was younger, about in 2018 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I met so many songwriters out there from Nashville, and they were going off and doing writes and stuff like that. And I was like, what the heck are they doing? Like, I write, but I write by myself. Like,
yeah.
So that kind of introduced me to like the songwriting thing. And I was like, well, I want to go to Nashville. I want to start seeing what this is about. So I'd start driving up here as much as my boss would let me. On the weekends, I'd come up literally every weekend. I'd stay out here after my shift Friday, sleep Friday, write Saturday, Sunday, drive home Monday. And I just freaking fell in love with it. And I was like, all right, well, there's so many people out here. I just want to start doing it. So I did that, and then I was like, well, what's the next step? So I started doing songwriter rounds and then loved those. I was like, oh, I get to play these new songs that I've been writing. And I'm telling you, I was writing terrible songs back then, man. I'm still writing bad songs, but I think everybody still does. But, man, I just fell in love with what Nashville was doing. I fell in love with writing songs and fell in love with being able to perform them. And randomly one day I got a call from a producer, and he was like, hey, man, just kind of stop by. I guess he had heard me at a writer's round, and I'd gave him my number. And he was like, come on, stop and play me a couple songs. And I was like, all right. And I thought I was just going to get to meet him, and offered me my first publishing deal. So it was very wild how fast it happened and how quickly I kind of got into the music industry, because I didn't even know what a song publisher did when I first started this. I had so much to learn when I jumped in.
You know, it's really confusing from somebody outside to really get a grasp of all the moving parts that it takes to make this music business turn.
Absolutely.
And publishing is so confusing all on its own. It's changing all the time, and you got publishing, and you got writers, and you got the splits and all the co-writes and everything else. It's very confusing. When you first started coming to Nashville, did you the songwriters that you met on The Voice, were those the people that you contacted, or did you just kind of come down here and find your way around? How did you get networked in with the people you started writing with?
I definitely started writing with them, I'd go down to Red Door, I'd go to Losers, and I would sit around there, and I would meet as many people that would talk to me, and I'd talk their ears off and ask them questions and stuff like that. And luckily I had a bunch of people that were super nice and let me write with them. That's how I met my first roommates. I was down at Red Door, and we were already drank way too many.
No.
Yeah, never at Red Door. But I had talked to this one guy, and he was like, man, we're getting a house. Like, would you want to move in? And I was like, yeah, man, definitely. I was still working full time. There was no way I was going to be able to do this. And he called me 2 weeks later. He was like, hey, man, still thinking about getting this house. Are you in? And I was like, shoot, what's the price of the house? So I just kind of moved down here on a whim, slept on an air mattress for a while until I could afford a bed, and just kind of rolled on with it, man. It's wild.
That's very interesting to me. I mean, it's so different than when I came to town. I mean, the whole landscape of Nashville is different. So you came to town, and you were driving back and forth and still working your other job. When did you cut bait on that and just dive full in? What year did you come to Nashville and let go of your job in North Carolina?
2019.
Yep.
Yep.
So you came before the pandemic. So, and then just getting rolling, get a house, and you're starting to ride a lot, and then everything gets shut down. What happened then?
Man, we were supposed to go out with Lynyrd Skynyrd and Travis Tritt that weekend that everything shut down. And I'll never forget, I was so excited. Man, I was pumped. We were flying out the next day, and we went to a place called Del Frisco's. And WME's above it, and our agent came down and was like, the shows are canceled. There's this thing called COVID. And we were like, what is that? And because we didn't really pay attention to anything that was going on. We were more just invested on being able to play. And that shut everything down, and I had no idea what we were doing. But I will say, with COVID, I took a lot of time to really hone in on writing. I wrote a lot. I wrote by myself a lot. I went back home. I did those Zoom writes. I don't know how many of you did of those.
But as few as possible.
Yeah, those suck, man. So I spent a lot of time with family, kind of reflected on just, wow, how different my life was. So I really enjoyed that time in as much as I could, obviously.
Yeah.
Just for writing songs, man.
So did you already have your publishing deal in place by the time COVID hit?
Oh, yeah.
So everything was rocking there. So you were still turning in songs and everything stayed on track and you were still doing your writes and everything. Yeah. When did you come back to town?
I only spent like 2 months home.
Yeah.
And just like we still had the place back in Nashville, but I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. I'd rather be closer to the country than I was in Nashville.
It was kind of strange times because everything was just shut down and so isolated. And downtown Nashville, we didn't feel it as much outside of downtown as it was downtown. But, I mean, it was just really a strange time.
It was.
Especially, and everybody that I've talked to that was just starting to get their career rolling right there at the front part of it, it was very frustrating because all of a sudden it's like the rug got jerked out from under you and everything just came to a screeching halt.
Absolutely.
It's probably very frightening to feel like you've got everything rolling your way and all of a sudden it's just, what do I do now?
Oh, man, that's exactly what happened to me. I had my first single out, and it was rolling, man. I mean, it was taking off. It's actually my first platinum single that I have now, and I'm like, wow. Like, I'm actually making something out of this music thing that I thought was just a wild dream. And then COVID comes, and you're like, what do I do now? Now you got to basically start over. You got to rebuild the momentum that you started and try and ride that new wave, you know?
I remember, you know, it's kind of strange. We all, when we close our eyes and we visualize what it is that we dream of in this music business, mine was very different. It never was about the money. I always just wanted to be on the bus. When I closed my eyes, man, I dreamed about the lifestyle of living and running up and down on the bus and smelling the diesel fumes. It wasn't about the name on the marquee. When you closed your eyes when things were starting, what was your dream? What do you visualize what you want to achieve with your career?
Man, it is so funny that you say that because it's the exact same way. With me, the money that comes and goes, man. That's just how my family's always been. We've never been obsessed with money or anything like that. I do it because this is exactly what I love to do. I get to live out something that I don't ever feel like I'm working, you know, like I feel like I'm having a freaking ball every day out there. So it's just a blessing that I even have people that are coming out to see my shows, man. So I just get excited that I get to do that. Wherever it takes me, it takes me. I'm not obsessed with being the biggest thing in the world. Would I like to be? I mean, I can't say I wouldn't, but I just enjoy doing what I'm doing and having fans that are listening to my songs, man.
That's awesome, man. You know, it's easy to get really overwhelmed by all of it, but, man, if you just kind of take it in stride and just be appreciative along the way, I think you get so much more out of the journey, man, because it really is a journey.
Absolutely.
And as you get to travel more and you get to go abroad and you get to meet other people and other cultures and other places, just soak it all in, man. It's an amazing ride. You get to see and do things coming up in a small town that you never thought you'd ever do. It's a pretty cool thing to be a part of. And if you really look at the percentages of it for all of us that have any success in this business, thousands of kids dream about it that never have anything happen, man. It's a very small percentage in the big scheme of things that ever get to have success in this business. It's a pretty cool thing, man.
Absolutely, man. Going back to this bus thing, though, do you remember your first weekend on a bus?
My first ride on a bus, when I first got to town, me and Tim McGraw became friends. Me and him were running around chasing the waitresses in the bars and stuff and getting up on riders' nights and all that kind of stuff. And he had a record deal early on, so it was before – It was before I actually cut my first record. It was probably in the spring of 91. I cut my album in May of 91. And I had been living in Louisiana prior to coming to Nashville. I was living in Ruston, Louisiana, and I was playing some clubs in Shreveport and all around that area. And Tim's from Louisiana, and I remember he invited me to take a bus ride. First time I'd ever even been on a tour bus, and I rode down to Shreveport to do a show and watched Tim do a show. And then we came back the next day. It was pretty cool.
Shoot, dude. I'll never forget the first time I slept in that bunk. I slept better than I have ever slept in my life. I don't know what it was. It was the humming or what it was. We were taking a drive out to, there was me and two other bands, and we were all super small camps, so we all could fit in one bus, and we all rented it together. And, man, we had a freaking ball. We thought we were rock stars, dude. We had no idea about nothing. But we went out there and played a show, and that was the best sleep I ever had in my life.
I don't know what it is about the bus, man. When that generator's on, it's just got that hum to it. I sleep so much better on the road. When I'm home, man, the sun comes up through the blinds, I'm getting up in the morning. Oh, yeah. You know, it's just
that's. And buses have them blackout curtains. I could sleep forever.
Oh, you get in that bunk, man. It's like you're locked out from the whole world. You wake up at 11, 12 o'clock. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Though, ain't it?
Oh, absolutely, man.
Yeah, and you pull the blinds down, you pull out after a show, and everybody sets up their party, and man, it's like you got your own little gang. It's a cool vibe, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's good, man, with at least with our camp, man, since we've all been friends for so long, it just feels like traveling with buddies. So we all get to see the world at the same time, and it's fun. Like, we don't have to call each other and be like, man, you'll never guess what happened this week, and we're all still together. So we have
play cards on the bus, too? Ever play?
No, we don't ever play cards.
We used to play cards on the bus, man. Actually, you know, you've got a bench seat there, a booth and everything. We'd have some kind of chair where we could get five people playing. We'd play Texas Hold'em, seven-card stud, five-card draw, five-card stud, and we'd play for hours at a time, man. And we had all these wild cards that we created. I remember I drew a Royal straight flush one time, spades, ace through the nine, and my only off card was an ace of hearts. And I had this Miami Hurricane Gilligan looking hat, and I took that hand to cards and I stuck it all inside that hat, and it's my lucky hat. I only played cards when I had that freaking hat on for like 3 years.
I love that.
Oh man, it was bad. And then we got so out of control that people started losing house notes before we'd get out of the driveway, and we had to stop for a while. You just keep pushing it till it gets out of control. We were so bad at gambling that we did this thing called bus roulette, where the front tire right outside the bus door, you take the caps off of it all the way around and write a number on the inside. And we took a Crown Royal bag and we took poker chips and we wrote numbers for all those, and everybody had put a 5, a 10, or a 20 in the bag. We drew a line at the top of the wheel hub and we'd just stop randomly, and who's ever thing was at the line,
yeah,
got the bag, but got the pot in the bag.
So you're starting a lot of bad habits.
Oh, I know, I dude. I'm just right telling here. You.
This is going to be terrible for my camp.
You ever played drinking Jenga? Take a game of Jenga, and on the blocks right in there, person to your right, take a drink. Person to your left, take a shot. Two people to the right does this, and you just build all this. You talk about destroying some people. It's an evil, evil game.
No, that one sounds fun. I would be into that one.
People will throw up. I'm just telling you what
so
I
that's one you got to do after an off day. You just got to.
Especially if you add brown liquor into it and tequila into it. I'm just not. Ooh, I'm telling you.
We have this mean plague on our bus of a PlayStation. And everybody loves to play basketball on it. And they'll have tournaments on that. And, man, I'm telling you, it's going to ruin a friendship one of these days. Because we get too damn competitive.
It happens.
It does.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
but you have to occupy your time when you're on the bus. I mean, it's you spend more time riding around on the bus than you do park. So it occupies a whole lot of time.
It's a lot of hurry up and wait is what I've learned.
Yeah, a whole lot of it.
Yeah.
But that's all part of the fun.
Oh, without a doubt, man.
What's your favorite city you've been to?
Man, I have to say, favorite city... That's tough. I like Chicago. I enjoy Chicago if I go down there. I like South Carolina. I forget the city down there that we went to, but we had a lot of fun down there. Oh, duh, Charleston. I'm sorry. I've been down there so many times.
Charleston.
Yeah, Charleston.
Charleston.
I like Charleston a lot. Those two are my favorite. My favorite venue that I play, Coyote Joe's.
Charlotte. Oh, I love Coyote Joe's.
Yeah, that's the place I went and saw so many of my first concerts, man. Golly.
I played that place a lot over the years. Yeah. Derek and Alan Presley.
Alan Presley. Absolutely.
They're my friends, man. We've been friends for a long time. Yeah, there's a lot of great clubs around the country. Have you played Billy Bob's yet?
I haven't got to play them.
Oh, you need to do some Billy Bob's, man.
Oh, I can't wait, man.
That's pretty. How about Grizzly Rose out in Denver?
I was just telling my manager that I want to play that one so bad. I haven't been able to go out there. I hear it's a lot like Coyote Joe's.
Real similar. Yeah, it does have a lot of similarities to it. Just those good old honky-tonks, man. I cut my teeth in those places. I love playing. We played every single one of them around the country, I think, for the first several years I was on the road, man. Yeah. It's kind of a rite of passage.
Yeah, definitely. We've learned a lot from these bars, man. I really truly believe that. I feel like we've had a lot of fun. And a lot of learning what to do in bad situations, like if in-ears cut out or wedges cut out or guitars go down and stuff like that.
It does happen. Situations. Yeah. It's just part of it, man.
Oh,
things are going to break. Things are going to fall down. You know, the drum stands are going to fall. The cymbal stands are going to fall apart. Something's going to happen. It's just part of it.
Oh, man.
And sometimes it might be because the guy setting them up might have drank a little bit too much night before and not tighten them up right. You just never know.
Oh, man. It happens to the best of us.
Absolutely. Wow. It's fun to talk to you, man. It's bringing back so many old memories of mine.
I have a question. Which out of those honky-tonks, do you have a favorite out of those?
Oh, you know, it has to be Billy Bob's. There was a chain called Cowboys. There used to be a Cowboys honky-tonk in Arlington that was probably my favorite back in the day.
Really?
But it's not there anymore. A lot of the casinos have taken over in a lot of places where the bars are. That fly is just
relentless. I know, he's tearing me up, man.
Must be your cologne.
Gotta smell good, man.
So what was the first big thing that you bought when you started making money?
Well, I bought my truck, and I was stoked about that. I drove around in this 2014 Chevy Cruze. That was my first car that I ever bought myself.
Yeah.
And then when I got that record deal came in, I was like, you know what? I'm going to finally get me a truck because I've wanted a truck forever. I just never had the money to get one. So I got me a 2020 GMC AT4.
Nice.
1500, and I still drive it. It's my favorite thing I've ever owned, man. I take care of it. I love it to death, man. It actually needs an oil change right now. It just came up. So I've got it. I'm probably going to leave here and go get an oil change.
Well, there's a lot of them around here, a lot of places to go. So are you getting ready to buy a house?
Man, we're really trying to. Yeah. We're looking out. We love Ashland City a lot, man. We've realized that town is just not our place. Like being downtown Nashville, it's hard to separate, I feel like. When you're down there the whole time, I feel like you just constantly mind on what's happening, what's going on down there, who's playing, what's this. And I feel like me, I have to kind of separate myself from the music industry as much as I can. And that's not like in a bad way. It's just like if I want to write songs about real life and affecting people that are out there doing the everyday jobs, I need to kind of live like that, you know?
Yeah, Nashville's kind of turned into a strange beast. It's almost like Vegas without the gambling.
That's a good
I wound up at this, I can't remember, I think we'd gone to see the Eagles, and we were in the William Moore suite. They'd set us up with a suite, and Peter Frampton came in, and he and I were sitting there talking, and he's lived down in the Gulch for a while, and he told me, he said, I got to get out of here. He said, these bachelorette parties and these trailers.
He was living in the Gulch?
Oh, yeah, in the penthouse in the Gulch. He said,
I would have never thought that.
He said, they're rolling around all night long. He says, 2 o'clock in the morning, they call them the Woohoo Girls.
Oh, yeah.
The freaking Woohoo Girls are about to drive me crazy.
You know the worst of them? It was the trash man that would come up at 4 a.m. and come slamming down trash.
And with the backup.
Oh, without a doubt. Man, that was the worst part about living downtown in an apartment.
I couldn't do it, man. I've gotten too spoiled being out here in the country, man. But I still like being close enough to town that I can get to things. And I love being on this side of the airport, too. That way, if you've got early morning flights, you know, you're on this side of Briley Parkway, so it's easier to get to the airport without fighting all the traffic in the morning. I like it better over here.
Oh, yeah. That traffic, man, that's a new thing to me. Learning how to finagle that is a task, man.
And Nashville over the last 10 years has about to get as bad as Atlanta. It really is. Yeah. It's getting worse and worse and worse all the time.
I hear it's the fastest growing city right now.
Of all the places that I travel, and like you too, I don't see any place thriving like Nashville is. I mean, it's got a bust soon. I mean, they're just all the new hotels and the condos and the apartments and stuff downtown. But I think it's starting to filter out. What I've noticed after being here for over 30 years is it's kind of like a pendulum. everything swings downtown, and you'll have this surge for a few years where everybody wants to live downtown. And, you know, they get out of college, they're starting their first jobs, they're working in the restaurant industry, or they're in the music business, whatever. Everybody wants to be in the party scene. And then it swings out. And then everybody wants to start a family. You want to slow the pace of life down. You want to get a grip on things and kind of detach from all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So you kind of move a little bit further out. So it ebbs and flows back and forth. And it's been that way for years. I've watched it happen several times.
I hear you.
Yeah. So it's not a bad thing. It's just part of the cycle of a growing city. But man, it's just it amazes me how well Nashville has grown. It's really amazing. When I first came down, Lower Broadway was nothing. The only thing down was Printer's Alley.
Really?
Lower Broadway, I mean, you had Tootsie's and you had the Ernest Tubb Record Shop, but you didn't have all the nightlife down there. We had a few bars and stuff around that we used to frequent, where all the road musicians and the songwriters would hang out when they weren't on the road. We had the Broken Spoke on Trinity Lane. We had Gabe's. We had the Rose Room out on Stewart's Ferry Pike. So that was the places where the road musicians and everybody went. And you'd see guys that played with Alan Jackson and everybody coming in and playing, you know, during the week, just sitting in a jam with everybody. Nowadays, you wouldn't be able to do anything like that because it would be all over social media, man. And then everybody in town would be there.
Social media, man, that is the wildest thing. How fast things can take off or
in an instant.
I mean, somebody random could go into a bar like Ed Sheeran. Actually, the other week, he came in and went to Santa's Pub, and before they knew it, I think that there was like 4,000 people there at Santa's Pub trying to go meet him.
That place is as big as that coffee table.
Dude, I'm telling
you. Like, how do you do that? Yeah. That is a cool little place, though.
Oh, man, I love that place. I've had a lot of drunken nights in karaoke there, man.
Yeah, I think some people that work with a management company have spent a little time at Santa's Club. Oh, man.
So what was the best bar then back in the day?
I loved Gabe's. Gabe's was this little cinder block building off of Trinity Lane, and it was behind the hotel there where the Broken Spoke was. And there was a bass player there. His name was Ron Sweet. And Ron would sing six nights a week, and he'd play the walking bass and do all that old Ray Price stuff. And I just loved to hear Ron sing. He could sing 5 hours, six nights in a row. I'd never heard anything like it. And you'd have everybody from the road that would come in and sit in and play. And I mean, back when I first got to town, if I could afford a beer, I mean, I didn't have enough money to do much of anything. I was just starting out, but I just loved to hear that guy sing. I mean, I just loved. I'd lived around where I thought I knew what really good musicians were until I got to Nashville, and I saw what really good musicians were on a nightly basis and watched them ebb and flow and guys come and sit in and act like they'd been there, that like they'd been rehearsing together for years. It was just amazing to me how well these people played together. Just the chemistry and the energy in town and the camaraderie with the songwriters and everything. You know what I'm talking about. When I came to Nashville, it was the first time that I ever felt like I was surrounded by all these people that were just like me. I'd never felt that way anywhere else.
That's such a true thing, man. It's everybody's out here and they're trying to chase the exact same thing, man. And it's a really cool community to be in. And one thing I love about Nashville is just how much of a community that it actually is and how much everybody kind of listens. Like, you hear it all the time. Everybody lifts each other up and stuff like that. And I think that's a really cool thing.
I miss Music Row being the way it used to be before it became condos and hotels and all the stuff, because I used to know where everybody was writing. I knew where all the publishing houses were. You'd pop in, you'd see somebody's car out back, and, you know, everybody's running up and down the alleys. And those three streets on Music Row were like this little town in the middle of this big old city. And it was just us, you know. And I'd be riding around on Music Row with Hal Ketchum. And, you know, we were all buddies. And, you know, I had pictures of me and Billy Ray Cyrus sitting on the front porch of the Music Mill, you know, just, and, you know, I'd pop in and Chestnut's over here cutting at such and such, and we'd pop in to see him at night when he was cutting his record. You know, just those things were going on all the time, and I'm sure they still are now. I'm just not in the know of where everything is at now. It's all moved to Berry Hill, and it's all a little bit more spread out, but everything back then was pretty much contained right there on Music Row.
And you didn't have to, like, dodge the trolleys trying to get down Music Row.
No, you didn't have to do any of that. We were in our own little bubble down there. It was really a cool time, man.
Oh, man, I'd kill to be able to go back in time and see that.
Yeah, and that was before cell phones and social media and everything, when you didn't have somebody watching you all the time. It was really a cool experience. Yeah. The Mumber Inn didn't look the same. None of those big buildings were there. You know, you had George Jones's museum and antique store that was right there. The Naked People in the Roundabout was just a fountain. I remember we were out running around drinking one night, and I uh, we we I put dishwashing liquid in the fountain, and it foamed up all of Music Row, and it was great. It was just great.
Oh, they're going to come find you now.
That's not even there anymore. That's a long time ago. Yeah, that's your limitation. But we foamed up everything. It was great.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, shoot, man.
See, you got to think outside the box.
You ain't kidding, man. Yeah.
Man. The fun times, man.
I'll tell you.
Yeah. So where do you hang out when you come to town?
Man, I'm kind of a homebody right now. I just, because these past 2 years I've been on the road so much that I don't really get to, like, be home and do normal life stuff. Like, yeah. I have to – I'm home for a day, do laundry, back on the road kind of deal. So lately it's just kind of been home. Me and my girlfriend will go out – or fiance, sorry, better not say that. About to get in trouble right there. It just happened. It just happened about 3 months ago. I'm still getting used to it.
Congratulations.
Thank you. But we just – we'll go find a good meal. We'll come home. We'll watch a movie or something, call it a night. But, yeah, I'm doing that. If I do go out anywhere, I like Corner Pub.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot. Either – any of them around town I like, but, yeah.
So, you get any hunting and fishing in? I see some stuff up on the board. You still get a chance to
do
that?
Oh, we take rods on the bus everywhere we go. We are avid fishermen, man. We fish every single – we're so stoked, man. We're going out on the Luke Bryan farm tour.
Nice.
So, I know there's some farm ponds that we're going to be able to see.
Awesome.
So, I'm going to be asking some permission a couple times, see if we can go fish some farm ponds. Man, hunting season, we got duck season that we're really excited for. I have a couple spots in Nashville, but I can't really do much deer hunting around here as much as I can back home.
Yeah.
So, waiting on that.
You got your places back home that you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, kind of in between there. So, if I can get back home in time for deer season, I'm
ready. Have you learned to block that far in advance?
Yeah. And even then, I have to block. She's in the room, but I have to block like 4 days each side of pad days for like, she's like, oh, we had to add a show. I'm like, all right, it still didn't mess with my full week, you know.
He's telling his secrets.
I know, man. I shouldn't have said
that. Yeah, but I've learned over the years, man, you got to book all that stuff way out.
Yeah,
because it'll sneak up on you. Next thing you know, we got this offer. No, we got this offer. No.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's so true.
You had a chance to go out of the country yet?
We did. We went to London last year.
Cool.
That was cool. I never thought I'd ever go over there. So being able to go over there and actually play in the O2 Arena,
that's pretty awesome.
Pretty sweet, man.
Did you get to do any sightseeing while you're there?
Well, it takes 3.5 hours to get anywhere in London. It is the hardest place to get around. There's no highway system. It is the wildest.
What?
That's just a geographical oddity. 3.5 hours away from everywhere.
I do not understand, man. I guess they have not figured out the highway system yet. So we had a lot of time to see stuff outside the window.
Wow. Any scheduled plans to go back overseas anytime soon?
Yeah, I think we're going to Australia next year.
Awesome. That's a long flight, dude. It's a long flight.
I don't usually upgrade to first class, but for that, I think you have to.
Trust me, you do. Go to business class and get you a little cubicle, man, and take all your stuff with you. It's worth the money.
Oh, dude,
it's so long.
What is it? It's like 20 hours or something, like 19
or
something?
It's a long way.
Golly,
and I've learned it's going over is bad enough, but you're so excited about getting there and you're gaining time going back. You lose time when you come back. The jet lag coming back is very real. I mean, it takes me 2 or 3 days to recover from it.
London screwed me up. I can't imagine how Australia's
worse.
Okay.
It's going to be worse.
But I get
your
screwed
body
up.
Clock gets all weirded out, man, just from the time zone change.
Does the 1 hour affect you? Like if you go to Eastern time or...
Nah.
Done.
I'm kind of numb to all that now.
I guess I'm just crazy. I don't know. It affects the hell out of me.
I just drink through it.
So that's the key. Hell yeah. Cards and drinking. We're going to get.
And if you want to go mild mimosas in the morning, or just put a little Bailey's in your coffee. It's fine. You don't even have to go all Bloody Mary. Just kind of ease into it. You can't drink all day if you don't start first thing
that's
in the morning.
That's very true.
So tell me about what's coming up for you, videos and things, music-wise, where are you at?
Shoot, man, I've been in the studio quite a bit. We're in there recording record two,
yeah,
which is really fun, man. I'm working with Dan Huff, and he's been
awesome. A beast.
Golly, dude. I was listening, and I was talking to my fiance again, and we Rocky Like a Hurricane came on,
yep.
And I was like, listen to Dan play. She was like, I didn't know that Dan played that song. That dude could rip and can still rip freaking guitar. I mean, he's ridiculous.
You know what else he played on? He played the solo on I See It Now.
Really?
That's Dan Huff.
Really? I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Huh. Yes, sir. That's Dan Huff.
Golly,
he's a beast.
He is, man.
Well, and such a great producer too, man. He's made some iconic records out there over the years, man.
One thing that I love about working with him, man, is he is so open to anything. He will listen to your ideas, even if they're.
Well, he's a musician's musician.
Yeah,
and first and foremost, he appreciates the craft
without a doubt, man. So being able to work with him has been a dream, man. It's, we have a lot of fun making these records.
That's awesome. Who all are you using in the sessions?
We got Tom Bukovec, guitar.
Badass, man. God.
Have you heard of this guy, Chris Donegan, yet?
Uh-uh.
What Chris is nasty. He's an electric player and an acoustic player as well, but acoustic-wise, dude, both of them, honestly. I mean, he's great, but acoustic, he plays so dirty and so, like, a band guy that it comes through in a whole different way. It sounds freaking great.
Who's playing drums?
I like Miles a lot. I use Miles McPherson a lot in town. He's just a heavy hitter, you know, like he's just got a lot of just oomph to his hit. Bass player, Jimmy Lee Sloss.
Yes.
Can't beat him, man. He's incredible.
Sweetheart of a guy.
Oh, my gosh. Nicest guy ever. I love having Dan Dugmore in sessions. Dan's freaking awesome.
Oh, Dan. Yep. I've used Dan, Dan a couple of times over the years. Yep. Yeah.
Incredible steel player. He's got a great sound. Who else is in there usually use?
Where are you recording at?
I like Blackbird or Backstage.
Yeah.
One of those two. Blackbird A or B, and then Backstage at Sound. Yeah.
Hard to go wrong with you.
There's many great session players in this town, man. It really is amazing. But what I've learned over the years, man, guys that get in the room, you got to have chemistry with guys. And bad attitude don't last long in the session world.
Oh, true that.
I'm telling you, they really don't, man. It's all about synergy when you get in that room. People being able to bounce things off of each other and creatively work together. There's something really special about the system that we have in Nashville. It's really freaking cool.
I agree 100%, man.
I was watching a thing with Bukovac, and I watch Rick Beato and a lot of session players and stuff, and I was watching a thing that he was doing with Bukovac, and he was, I think Beato would ask him what the biggest lesson that he had learned about playing sessions over the years, and he was talking about the fact that he had to learn to get out of his own way. He had to learn how to detach. For example, if you're playing on a record and he had just played what he thought was the greatest solo he had ever played on whatever project he was working on, the producer's like, don't really like that direction. Can you change direction? You've got to detach yourself from getting your feelings hurt because you thought what you did was badass.
Mm-hmm.
And reset and get your mind focused on doing something completely else and approach it with the same energy and the same passion that you did just 5 minutes or 3 minutes ago, and do it quick and be able to not let that get in your head. And there's a trick to that, man.
Oh,
there really is. That's I can't imagine how difficult that must be when you really lock in on something and you have to change direction immediately.
Absolutely.
And you don't have any time to play around with it. You just got to come with it. That's such a skill set to me, watching how those guys pull that off.
Holly, man. I will never forget my first time in a studio, and I'd never really done anything, and I was recording my first song, Giving You Up, and just seeing the process of the song coming to life.
Yeah.
And watching that process, it was the wildest thing, because I was like, wow, they took what I'd played in my bedroom on acoustic guitar for 3 years now and brought the song to them.
And then you come in there and you watch the song leader chart it out with a bunch of numbers, and then they go in and they structure it and they play it, and then they do their overdubs, and the next thing you know, you're doing a vocal, and it's going to mix, and it's going to mastering. Did you realize all the stages that go into this before you came to town?
Dude, it took me until about 3 years ago to understand what the heck mixing was. I had no idea. I was like, what are they doing? And now I understand it, but I would always hear it and be like, wow, that sounds incredible. Mastering, my ears are too shot. I don't really know the difference. I just know it's louder now. But yeah, man, that first studio, just being in there and feeling that energy and understanding like what I was doing, or well, not knowing what I was doing, but not knowing what I was doing, if that makes sense. Was something that I will cherish forever, man. I'll never forget that feeling.
It's a pretty amazing feeling the first time you get in there with a big old record like that, when you have all the pieces in place and you get to put your vocal on it and you get to hear that. When you leave, do you remember getting that? Are you still getting CDs when you leave the studio? I still get a CD when I leave the studio.
I don't even got a CD player in my truck.
I don't either anymore. I'm not in my new truck. But so do you get it sent to your phone? How do you get it? Because you know you want to listen to it when you leave.
So I never get it. I have to take a voice memo. I will say that's one thing Dan's bad about. He likes to wait until the very end to give me everything. So I've kind of started sneaking voice memos on my phone and just sitting it up.
Because you know you want to listen to it when you leave. I want to sit there and listen to them to a rough mix when I get done in the evenings, and then I want to hear it in my truck on the way driving home.
Absolutely.
I miss being able to do all that stuff.
Have you ever felt like you've blown yourself out to a point where, like, you've listened to the song so much in your car that you're not, like, you lose the excitement about it?
I can't, even when that does happen, there will always be a point where I'll go back to it again. I can't say that I ever burn completely out of it, unless there's something about it that I missed and I'm going back and listening and referencing after everything's finished and I missed something that I didn't like and it irritates me to the point that I don't want to listen to it anymore.
I'll listen like religiously where I'll just kind of get in the cycle of just listening. How can this be better? What can I do on this? And eventually I'll listen and I'll be like, oh shoot. Like, I think I just got to put this away for a while and kind of get my mind away from it and think about other songs, write other songs, and then go back and listen to it. And that's, like, my reassurance.
So when Dan is rough and mixes and stuff, does he send you stuff for you to proof? Does he ask your opinion on things? Do you tweak things along the way? Do you ever
Absolutely.
Do that?
Absolutely. I had to – just actually 2 days ago, I had to up some tempo on one of the songs. It just felt like it was dragging a little bit. And – it wasn't nothing wrong production. It was just dragging a little bit. And then on another song, there was just some stuff that was missing up top. It just did not catch me right away. And I was like, there needs to be something that just catches your ear and makes you kind of
like a tambourine or a percussion or an overdub or something. Do you ever, one of the things that I will do when I'm referencing things, I'll actually print the lyric off and I'll go down through and I will make little notes on any little imperfections I hear in the vocal. Mm-hmm. If there's a dip down or if I'm missing a guitar part that's not there, even if I don't like the sound of the kick drum or the snare or the hi-hats down, I will literally go through and make notes and be really specific when I go back to my engineer about every little minute detail. It's not, well, something's wrong in the second verse. I mean, I'm extremely specific about what I want that I'm tweaking out.
I will say, and that shows, because when I heard I was doing this, I went back and I listened to a lot of your music. Your drum sounds are amazing.
Thank you.
The snare sounds are huge. I mean, they're massive on everything. Yeah. But they're not in the places that they're not supposed to be. And it's you've got some really great sounds on
that. You know, the weird thing that I've learned about dynamics over the years, the first record that I cut was on analog. And it was on an Otari? I think that's what it was. Remember? It was an old real machine before we went to 48 digital. It was a 24 track Antares, I believe.
I came up on Pro Tools, so Studer's the one that
bless his heart.
I was gonna say I ain't got a clue.
But anyway, if you think about dynamics before the digital world, especially before Pro Tools, when you played dynamics, it was about increasing the intensity. The drummer would play a little bit heavier, the guitar player would play a little heavier. Yeah. Nowadays, if you look at the graph when you're cutting on Pro Tools, when you get that final mix, everything is like
there.
Slammed up in the box. So dynamics is created by adding and subtracting things. Mm. I mean, you add things to add dynamics to it because all the levels are shoved up so hot. And that's where a true mix engineer comes into place these days, man. Guys that really know what they're doing, that understand how to build those things in, because you've gone from having a space this big to having that little bitty graph, man. Very different now from what it used to be.
So who mixed a lot of those?
Julian King. Julian King and I have worked together off and on for a long time.
Really?
Don Cook did a couple of records. There were several that me and my buddy Flip Anderson produced. Butch Carr, rest his soul, engineered a lot of those things. We did part of the Coast Is Clear record. We did all of Lessons Learned, my self-titled album on Warner Brothers. James Stroud did a lot of that. James, I learned a lot of that stuff about drums from James, because James was a drummer.
Yeah.
And he had sampled stuff over the years from a lot of venues that he had been in. I mean, he had a big that snare sound, but the good clean bottom end too, man.
Yeah, man.
You know, he had really always had great drum sounds. Man. The one thing that I learned so much from James, though, when I came to town, I'd been emulating so many people. I mean, I could sing a Randy Travis song, I could sing a George Strait song, Keith Whitley song, I could do Bo Siva stuff. I had a good range, and I could do phrasing pretty much on top of everybody. And I had a lot of little tricks, but I didn't know what to do with any of them. Mm. James really looked at me, and this is the mark of a great producer. He took the things that made me unique and made me special and made me focus really hard on those things. Wow. And pulled those things out of me and made that part of my sound and really taught me what it was to be a true singer.
That's awesome.
I mean, and guys like Dan know how to do that too.
For sure, man. And there's been a lot of times, like, he doesn't like for me to do overdubs. Yeah. For like vocals. He wants me to cut all vocals same day. And he says that he says, if I think too much about it, then I'm going to miss the magic that I'm going to come up with when I do it. So all of this past record and this record here has been straight up.
Well, your voice is different every day.
It is.
I mean, and getting to match. I've learned too, there's a placement on the microphone. Like if I'm doing a vocal, I want to get and find that right spot. Whether it's up close or wherever, and once I find where that is, I plant my feet and I try not to move. And when he starts hitting me with overdubs and I'm punching lines and stuff, I want to stay in that exact spot. Mm-hmm. I want to breathe the exact same way. That way I try to get the tone, the same characteristics in the tone coming out. And that's a really hard thing to do, but it's all about getting head tones and everything wrapping around this. And if you move just the slightest bit, it changes.
Oh, so
and much. Trying to come back in a day or two later and trying to find that spot again is virtually impossible.
Oh, without a doubt. Man, without a doubt. I will say, I don't know what mic you use, but the mic that I've been using, I've been having a trouble because I'm a very active singer. Like, I like to move around for some reason, like, just from coming from stage where I'm just used to moving around. I get to hold it here so I can at least move with it. That is the biggest struggle with me, of just planting my feet and being able to sing right into the diaphragm. I've had a hard time learning that, but
yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of little tricks that you learn along the way. George Jones taught me so much, man. I got to spend so much time with George early on, and George was just really freaking good, man. Right,
one of my favorite vocals of all time.
Just right up to just a few years before he passed. I mean, George was really, he was just amazing, the power and control and the range that he had. I mean, listen back to some of those records. He's a rangy old cat, man.
Absolutely.
I mean, George sang his ass off.
And one thing about him, he conveys emotion better than a ton of people. Keith Whitley's another one who conveys emotion. And that is something that, like I was telling you earlier with the blues music that I would listen to, that's what captivates me.
It seems like nowadays, too, everybody is so... One of the things that I don't like about the technology, and I love the fact that it makes it so much easier to punch. I mean, you can do full band punches now if you want to change the ending of something. I mean, as long as you're still set up in the same spot and you're in the same room, the same place.
Absolutely.
But it seems like it gets harder and harder to identify people because everybody is so tuned so hard that it's taken all the personality out of people. Mm. I want to see everything loosen back up where people have those little minor imperfections and they're able to get, you know, so you can tell who the artist is. I mean, it's too many people sound the same, man.
Oh, my gosh, man. I could go on a tangent for an hour about that. That is one thing that I feel has plagued music in a way, and not just country music, just music in general.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like we've taken the feeling out of a lot of things, and the emotion and the mess-ups and the mistakes that are going to happen live anyway are just not shining through anymore, and everything's, like you were saying, compressed down into a box. So it's trying to – you got to figure out how to break out of that box, and that's a tough thing to do now with all the technology. It really is.
It really is, and to let your personality shine through and to be okay with hearing the little imperfections here and there. It really is. That's what makes – you know, you if you go back and say you take a Led Zeppelin record or a Van Halen record and you shove all those mixes up as hot as what we run everything now and you Pro Tool them all where they're just perfect and they're aligned and everything, they wouldn't feel the same.
No, man.
They would not. It would be a completely different experience. Even if you went back and did some of those old George Jones records. I mean, all of the old country stuff. If you tuned all those things hard, a lot of times they added verb in and they mixed things in where it just kind of had a flow to it. It made it special.
Yeah, man. Yep. There's a lot of talent, man, back in the day. I could not imagine going into a studio, having tape, and having to make sure that you landed on that tape and not going off that. Because, like, with Pro Tools, it's so... Like, you don't have to worry about, like, messing up. You're like, oh, I'll just go back and punch it later. Now, man, I mean, with tape, I couldn't imagine just having to – I would ruin some producer's day, I feel like. With some of the things I've done vocally that I've looked back at, oh, man, I would ruin some days.
You'd buy more tapes, would you?
Oh, yeah, and that's not cheap.
Junior even missed the period where they splice tapes. I remember watching them splice tape in the studio. There was an art to that, man.
One of the things that fascinated me about this whole editing process, because Pro Tools is so easy, but first time I heard about a window edit, all right, so you had 24 tracks, but say you need to move a kick drum, So you have to, I mean, damn near take a magnifying glass out and just cut out the little kick drum plays.
Really?
Yeah, you're kidding. It's called a window edit. Yeah.
Insane. So you would just cut it straight out of the tape.
Yes.
Add a little angle.
Yeah. You just,
wow.
And then tape it back in there. But it was, the punches were so much more forgiving back then on tape, mm-hmm. apparently. I've recorded a tape like probably 3 times in my life. So the majority of it has been Pro Tools. But as far as the punching in and out on tape, it was a lot more forgiving, so you don't hear the clicks and the pops like you do with digital audio. So it's just, but the window edit thing was like, holy man, how did you even go about starting to do that? It just seems,
how do you
even
find that little spot?
I can't see that well.
Yeah. Well, and you go back and you think about all the stories you heard about the Beatles and stuff. I mean, when they were cutting on a 4-track and pinging stuff down and adding layers to it, that's fascinating to me.
Man, I tell you what, it's so funny that you bring up Beatles, because I was just listening to them not too long ago just to, I don't know, just kind of cleanse my palate.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember listening to... oh shoot! Boom, boom, ba-da-da-doom, doom.
Come together.
Yes, I was listening to that, and when I was younger, when I listened to it, it felt like a wall of sound, just massive, and like.
But it's not.
No, it's not. It's not so simple. Now that I know like what I'm listening to and can like distinguish the instruments, it's a small part that they have made sound so huge back then.
It's fascinating too. You bring that up. I'm able to sit down and I can listen to a record and I can isolate everything in my head. Mm. I can hear the drum part, you know. But you remember when you were a kid how different everything sounded. Oh, it was just amazing, you know. And you go back and listen to some of those records and they don't sound quite as good as you remember them.
Man, I wish I could go back to that though. And sometimes, like, I wish I had like 2 different sections I could turn on for that and be able to listen to things as a, like, somebody that doesn't know anything about music kind of deal, and just listen to the mix how it is and understand it versus trying to hear the imperfections and things like that. I feel like I dig in too deep now.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the same way with the movie business. Once you see the man behind the curtain, man, you can never unsee it. Mm-hmm. Once you see what goes on and understands that outside of that little box that they're taping everything, all this other stuff out here, it's pretty fascinating to see. But it changes your perspective a lot.
Even with concerts.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like I go to concerts, and I don't – not that I don't enjoy them. I still enjoy them.
I'll sit there going, is he lip syncing?
Absolutely. No, I'm looking for the things that are.
Oh, yeah. I'm picking it apart. I mean, I don't just go and enjoy anything anymore. I mean, that's just part of it. You just go in and just absolutely pick it apart.
It drives my fiance nuts. She's like, why aren't you just having fun? I'm like, I'm having a great time. I'm just watching. I'm just observing what's going on back there.
So where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Oh, man. It's hard to tell. I'm just kind of letting God take me where I'm going. I've had to do a lot of reflection in this last year of just kind of, I got too consumed with the music industry and got too consumed with chasing and comparison of other people and other artists. And I had to step back and still have to step back and realize, man, I'm on my own path. I do what I do. I don't need to be trying to set a time limit for myself of what I need to do. I just want to make the music that I'm proud of and the fans want to hear. So that's what I'm doing.
You still got that foundation in your heart, too. That's a big thing, man. Don't ever lose that. That's the one thing they can't take from you.
Absolutely.
Don't let them have that, man.
Thank you, man.
It's been a pleasure chatting with you today, absolutely, brother. Man, very nice getting to know you. Look forward to seeing you out on the road. Hope we get to do some shows together.
Man,
love to share
too.
The stage with you at some point, man. Tell them all your socials and all the places they can find your stuff.
I don't even know. I think they're all just Cameron Marlowe.
Does she take the password away from you like mine take mine?
Oh, yeah. I have no idea what my password is.
I'm not allowed to get on anything. I'm too dangerous. They don't let me do anything.
Man, I really appreciate it. It's been a joy or a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Cameron Marlowe. Thank you, brother. Pleasure, man. Awesome.